What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Broadcasting live from the greatest city in the world.
Austin, Texas, baby.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
You guys want to play some twos?
You know what? Actually, we're kind of in the middle of a conversation.
P&E.
What's P&E?
Bucky Godbolt, Aaron Hogan on the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260 and hornfm.com with the Longhorns Play and Austin Talks Sports.
B&E with you, Doe Bucky today. Bucky is dealing with some personal biz. He'll be back tomorrow and the rest of the week. But Isaiah Collier and I manning the ship and thanking you on this National Thank You Day for being with us. We also are going to make a little bit of news here coming up that we're excited about. Also talk a little baseball, shift some gears. Talking a lot of football this morning, obviously. This is our Wednesday over the hump edition of the program, where we kind of put everything that's happened in the past weekend in the rear view and look forward to the coming weekend and start to really focus our attention there. And then learning and hearing from Casey Thompson this morning is a big and a good thing. I think for fans to hear from the new starting quarterback at Texas, how long does he remain? That, I think, is in question, but does feel like if he has a really good game on Saturday, he could be the guy moving forward into Big 12 play beyond that. We will also continue our NFL talk as we now zero in on week two, coming off of gangbusters week one for the NFL. As we've mentioned, the TV ratings were just through the roof. Fans, in the crowds were there back and cheering, but then the TV attendance was through the roof, record setting for the NFL over the weekend. A big jump from the COVID pandemic year and even 2019, a big jump there. So the NFL certainly back and looking forward to week two. Now, it is odd that they're only it's just statistically weird for me that there are only three games of the 16 this week, Zay, that feature teams that both won their games in week one. Just three. And you would think maybe there'd be more head-to-head 1-0 matchups, but not the case. Only New Orleans, Carolina, San Francisco, Philadelphia, and Vegas, Pittsburgh. The only three matchups of 1-0 teams looking to go 2-0.
Texans going to the Super Bowl, baby. 1-0.
Well, they're going to the dog pound to play Baker Mayfield and a bitter bunch of Browns because they have to feel like they gave that game away. All right, so here coming up, we're going to talk to our buddy Gene Watson, who is a Major League Baseball executive, and this is where we're going to break a little bit of news this morning, but Gino's got a big day ahead of him, and he'll let him tell you about that. But we're going to break down the final few weeks of the regular season in baseball, where we stand as we push towards the postseason. Before we talk to Gene, though, I do want to tell you about our friends at the PGA Tour Superstore and our PGA Tour Superstore Tip of the Week. It's our golf tip of the week, and it's brought to you by our friends there. Shop with the pros at PGA Tour Superstore or at pgasuperstore.com. It's one of the two or three places in the world I would love to have a shopping spree. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to get lost in that. The Academy, PGA Tour Superstore, and then that's about it. I mean, I could just spend all day at that store. It's wonderful. Here's the tip. Zay, did you know that the Ryder Cup, the European team, announced their Ryder Cup captains yesterday? And they went with veterans Sergio Garcia, the Austinite, Ian Poulter, and Shane Lowry. The three captains' picks, they had 9 automatic qualifiers, where the U.S. had 6 automatic qualifiers and then 6 captains' pick. I would just say this. I'm going to be rooting like hell. Here's my PGA Tour Superstore golf tip of the week. I'll be rooting like crazy for the U.S. at Whistling Straits. But I think getting the Europeans at plus 180 on the market right now is a good tip. I'm just saying. Because I think the USA can win this thing. I think with the guys at the top. I like that Captain Patty Harrington went with veteran guys. Sergio Garcia is maybe the best Ryder Cup player ever. Ian Poulter is just a witch in the Ryder Cup. They went with veterans, and I'm going to be rooting for the Stars and Stripes as always. But I think if I'm getting plus 180, I think I might have to think about it. I think that might be worth $100. But $100 to win 180, if all the Europeans have to do is win the Ryder Cup, I think that's a good value. It's just my tip of the week, brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore. I've lost my man card in the last segment because I liked a Bud Light cucumber seltzer, and now I'm just picking the odds. I'm looking at the number. Let's go to the Vaquero's Cafe and Cantina Hotline. He is our authority on baseball. When it's time to talk some hardball, nobody better than our friend Gene Watson, Major League Baseball executive. And Gino may have a little bit of breaking news here. Gene, how are you? Good morning.
Good morning, Aaron. How are you, man?
Well, I mean, I'll let you reveal. You're headed to to Kansas City today. Is that right?
I am. After an 11-month hiatus with the Angels, today will be my first official day back with the Kansas City Royals. It was actually executed on Sunday night, but with the restructuring, as you saw yesterday, with Dayton Moore becoming the president of the club and J.J. Piccolo becoming the new general manager, they're going to continue some restructure downward, and I'm going to be returning to the Kansas City Royals today. So very excited. My family's just elated. You know, when you're anywhere for as long as we were in Kansas City and you get away from it, you get great perspective, both good and bad. I mean, the Angels was a tremendous, tremendous learning experience for me, being able to work with six guys from different organizations and be around Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani and Joe Maddon every day was a tremendous learning experience. But at the same time, you look back at, you know, the experiences you had in Kansas City, and Kansas City is home for me and my family, and we're just super excited to be headed back today.
Well, congratulations, and I know later in the morning your new role will be announced and that kind of stuff, and we'll let the team reveal that. But, you know, I know you loved working with the Angels, and as you just said, all the experience you gathered, but, you know, West Coast and you live central, I mean, I know there's part of that, and that was some rough travel for you, but that you're used to that. You're used to all over the country, right?
Yeah, it was unique. Having to stay up till 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning to you kind of have to live a different schedule, because you know when the game ends, the work doesn't end, and so it, you know, 2-3 o'clock in the morning nights turned into 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, and so you've got to balance that. The travel, obviously, when you're commuting, working in the office was a little bit different. My wife is super upset because she lost the beach. She's not real fired. she had grown accustomed to Huntington Beach, and it's we're very, very excited about the announcement that's soon to come.
Well, is there that breaking news now, Zay, that there's not a beach in Kansas City? There's no beach in Kansas City? Well, there's barbecue.
There's no beach, but there's the plaza.
There's barbecue in Kansas City. Not as good as Texas. Hey, before we talk some baseball, and congratulations, by the way, Gene. So excited for you, because I know you're excited about the opportunity you're about to undertake. But you were in Fayetteville on Saturday, is that correct?
Yeah, me and my son went up, and he and I have probably – you know, since he was born in 1993, that we've always tried to make one really good trip a year. And it's really such a special time for me. And he has such a great love for the university and bleeds orange, as do I. And I got to tell you, I've been in a lot of places. I've been to Magallanes, Caracas in Venezuela. I've been to the Caribbean World Series. I've been in some hostile environments. We had to leave early in the third quarter because the fans – it was getting pretty ugly. I mean, he got pinned up against the wall in the bathroom. We had a guy that went after us right after the fumble inside the five, and you could tell right away that it was going to be a pretty hostile environment. But I've never seen anything like what was Saturday night.
I'm with you. I mean, I didn't see that. And we were up in the upper deck with a big party of the Longhorn fans. You probably saw on TV if you're watching, a big group up there. But, yeah, I mean, that was – and I think it's fair to say, Gino, that the Longhorns didn't on the field didn't react very well to that environment at all. They didn't. They seemed a little shell shocked to me from the opening kickoff.
No, but you know what? I really love what Steve Sarkisian's doing and what the program is about and where it's headed. And you know, you're going to have these bumps in the road, and they're going to learn from it and grow from it, and they're going to be better off from it. So I really feel good about where the program's headed for sure.
Don't disagree with you. Gino, the baseball, we're pushing on towards the postseason, and let's pick up some of the top storylines. The Dodgers clinched last night. The Giants clinched earlier in the week. And what can you say about San Francisco? I mean, they're the first team to clinch. They won 9 in a row now, and I know they're one of the stories, if not the story of baseball, but it seems like they're priming for the right time of the year.
It is truly, truly one of the most amazing stories that I've seen in my time in the game, what the Giants have done. And I exchanged text messages with Gabe Kapler yesterday, who's a good friend, and what that operations has been able to do with that team. And not just from what they're doing this year, but when you think about a team that won the World Series in 2010, 12, and 14, and the push that they made to win those three World Series, it takes a little time when you stay invested in your 26 and 40 man roster like they did, And then to be back so quick and the way they're doing it, you know, they've got a very young and innovative major league coaching staff. Their in-game analytics and the way they game plan is second to none. And just Gabe Kapler taking a group of players like Tommy La Stella and Brandon Crawford and Duggar and guys that were just kind of like soft roll fives, marginal type players, and making them believe that you could win with each other and putting those players in the right situations to be successful is truly, truly one of the more remarkable things that I've seen in my time in the game. And they're not just winning. They're winning with two of the best teams in baseball in their division. And it's truly a great accomplishment for Gabe Kapler and their baseball operations group.
Gene, 45 games over 500. They're 95-50. I mean, they're just absolutely rolling. And the Dodgers are just two games behind them. They've got 93 wins. And I think it's fair to say in that division, San Diego's been a bit of a disappointment at 74-70. I know they've dealt with some injuries, but they're 20 games back of the Giants. And their payroll, if you look at it, much higher than what they're doing in San Fran.
You know, I talked to somebody in San Francisco in the front office, and they made a great point. That could be overlooked with all of this. You know, Brandon Crawford, Brandon Belt, veteran players, two of the pillars of that organization for the last 11 years. You know, during the pandemic, while most people, you know, were, you know, traveling and doing the things that would normal do in the normal lifestyle, those two guys worked extremely hard in the weight room and on their bodies and on their, you know, just their overall athleticism. And there's a lot to be said about that, about rejuvenating your career when you do that. And both of those guys have done it. It's truly been an amazing story for two veteran guys that were kind of on the back nine. Brandon Crawford's turned it into a 2-year extension for him this season that, you know, when you're late in your career like that and you feel like you might be at the end, and then you never know if you're going to ever play the game again based on the pandemic and the situation going on with Major League Baseball and the CBA coming up on December 2nd, it kind of makes you reflect on, you know what, if I get one more chance, what am I going to do with that opportunity? And these two guys have been unbelievable this year. They've almost rejuvenated their careers with this season.
Gene Watson is with us. He'll be in Kansas City today for a big announcement. He is headed back to KC after nearly a year with the LA Angels. But, gosh, that's exciting news for you, Gene. I want to get to the American League and the Astros and for our Astro fans, but stick in the National while we're there because it does feel like the Giants and Dodgers are heads and shoulders above everybody. Milwaukee's really good. They're sitting atop the Central. No one really emerging outside, you know, to chase Atlanta in the American League East. But, boy, it handicapped that big picture now that we're heading up on October. Dodgers, Giants, Brewers, is there anybody that can challenge those three?
Well, what's going to be interesting as we get to the end is the Brewers and Giants play a series at the end and the Dodgers and Padres play a series at the end. And if home field advantage is not in play and it's locked up, now teams are going to go into restructuring their rotations, restructuring their lineups. You know, as teams begin to clinch, and this is kind of one of my little concerns for any team in September when you clinch early and you kind of, you know, you have that celebration and, hey, we're going to give these guys a day off we're going to workload manage and we're going to monitor arms and you get away from what you've been all season long. It's really, really hard to turn it off and then turn it back on, especially when you look at the history of the wild card teams that have to play at the highest intensity level to the very end, to the finish line. And then they begin to get on a roll. So you've got to manage the schedule. And in 2015, I mean, we literally won home field advantage on the last day of the season. Mark Burley was going for 200 innings, and they started him on the last day of the season, and he didn't get out of the first inning, and we won home field advantage. And that was a tremendous advantage for us as you get into the playoffs, for travel, for your fans, for your players' families to be able to get to games. It was enormous knowing we were going to have to go back through Toronto. So those are the types of things that teams have got to start paying attention to now, trying to keep that winning edge that you've had all season long, trying to monitor the workload of your pitchers, monitor the workload of your position players. But really about the last 5 or 6 games of the season, you got to get going because that wild card team is really going to be on a roll. And when you look at those two series in the National League at the end with San Francisco and Milwaukee and the Dodgers and Padres, it's going to make for high drama going into the last weekend of the season.
American League, Gene. By the way, real quick, just a quick one on the Giants. Are they built for the postseason, even though they've been so great in the regular season? Are they, that whole analytics thing and the way they line things up, is that a regular season thing, or could that be a problem for them come postseason?
I think it still comes down to preparation. I personally believe that power wins in October. You've got to have, you know, three quality starters that are going to power the ball by hitters. You've got to have a bullpen, 7, 8, 9, that are going to power ball the by. The sinker, slider, pitch to contact, ground ball guys don't normally work in October. But so much now is about preparation that it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
Certainly is. American League, obviously, best team is Tampa. I mean, I know you gush about the Rays and that organization. They've won 90 games already. They're pushing towards another 100-win season, even with all the transition, and they're constantly in transition. They're going to win that division going away, which includes Toronto and the Yankees and the Red Sox. Just amazing. White Sox are going to win the Central, and the Astros are going to win the West, Gene. When you talk about power in October winning, I did see the other day where the Astros have a chance to finish the year with the best batting average, ERA, and fielding percentage in baseball of all the teams, which would be a pretty rarefied air for them. But are they built to win in October? I saw Zach Greinke get rocked again last night. I'm not sure about that rotation when it comes to October. What do you think of the Astros and what Dusty Baker has?
Well, they certainly have the offense to be successful. There's no question about that. And they have the track record. They have the experience. And that's a really big deal when you get into October, is to have that playoff experience and guys that have been there, and you kind of take it to the next level. This is really, the American League is really going to be interesting down to the end. I mean, you look at the Yankees, Toronto, and Boston, all even in the wild card, Seattle and Oakland, three and a half back, and the way the schedule plays out, one of those guys could climb back into it. So you really have five teams that are sitting there in the wild card and with a chance to play. And I think the American League is really going to be an intriguing story down the stretch. I think there's a situation where we could have a 163rd game, and I truly believe that there's a little bit of a gap between the power and the talent base in the American League and the power and the talent base in the National League. Now, I personally think the Dodgers could win this thing all again, but if the White Sox get hot, they got a chance to be very, very dangerous with the way their team sets up.
Yeah, I know. I've heard you talking with Craig and the guys about the White Sox, and you know, Astro fans know the qualities of their team, especially with Bregman back, and he's starting to heat it up. Yordan having another great year. They certainly have the offense, but the White Sox are a team. You know, early in the year, Gene Watson is with us, our baseball insider, high-level executive now with the Kansas City Royals as he's heading back home. But, Gene, the White Sox, you know, Tony La Russa took some heat early for some of the managerial decisions, and I think a lot of people doubted bringing him back at his age at this point. But fair to say he's done a nice job, and this team does have a chance to be very dangerous over the next 5 weeks.
I compare it a lot to when Jimmy Leland came back to the Detroit Tigers. And early on in that process, you were hearing a lot of stories about how the players were kind of fighting the process and fighting the extra work and fighting kind of an unconventional old school way of doing things. And you could kind of hear that and see that early on with the White Sox, but certainly the proof is in the pudding. They've got a tremendous group. Jose Abreu is one of the best players in the game on and off the field, tremendous leader. It's a very super talented team. Luis Robert is one of the best young players in the game of baseball that people you barely even know about. Tim Anderson's one of the best leadoff guys in the game, and he's the kind of guy that can take a series over and really electrify an offense. And with Tony La Russa's experience and with the starting pitching that they have, this is a club that has a chance to be really dangerous in October. And on the National League side, I would tell you that the Milwaukee Brewers are kind of that same story on the National League side as well.
Yeah. Last thing, Gene, I know you got a busy day. You're flying to Kansas City today, and we'll be looking for that breaking news later today. But, Gene, the Yankees, and I know we got a lot of Yankee fans that listen. They're going to be in that race with the five teams potentially in the American League. Do you think the Yankees get in? And I know they've been a roller coaster of a team this year. They obviously have a lot of talent and can be dangerous in October.
I do. I do think, I mean, the schedule plays to them a little bit. I know they're playing the Orioles right now. They got a big win last night. I think the leadership of that team, I think the regard that they have for Aaron Boone, and they're just so good with information and so good with rallying around each other. And they really, truly have been the streakiest team in baseball this year. But I think in the end, they figure it out and they find a way to get in.
And finally, Gene, as you move back to Kansas City, that'll be announced today. Do you Can you even, I know you got to spend the whole year around Shohei Ohtani, and he's probably likely going to win the MVP. I know there's people talking about Vlad Guerrero coming forward, but it's hard to argue at all with what Shohei has done. And I know you've been around baseball your whole life and been in the game for 30 years. I don't think any of us have seen what Shohei has done this year, but I know in his mind it's not something he's just going to plan to do this year. That's just, he'll be back again to keep doing what he's doing.
Yeah, Aaron, one of the real thrills was to be able, not just to be around him, and I know Mike Trout's been injured all year, but to be around him and the kind of person he is, and I've been able to work with some great players, Craig Biggio, Tony Gwynn, Nolan Ryan. I've been around some really, really good players in my career, but to be able to manage the overall scope of what Shohei Ohtani has to manage, I mean, he literally has a country watching his every move every day, and the way he goes about his life, what kind of teammate he is, the way he prepares, he's a great teammate. That was kind of the mantra going into spring training, was let Shohei be Shohei, and he answered every question that the organization would have. And without Mike Trout in the lineup, and without Anthony Rendon in the lineup, and with Albert Pujols being gone, what that team has been able to do this year, being four games under 500, is truly, they got $150 million in active, and they're four games below 500. And that's a testament to Joe Maddon, to Perry Manassian, the entire baseball ops group, and what they were capable of doing. And the future is extremely bright in LA, and Shohei Ohtani, I mean, let's just hope that we can continue to watch this guy play for the next 10 to 15 years at the major league level and just see what he becomes.
Gene, congratulations again. I know you're excited, and we'll look forward to reading the story this afternoon when you get back to Kansas City. But thanks for the insights this morning, and congratulations.
You bet, Aaron. Thanks so much. Y'all have a great week.
All right, there's Gene Watson. He's had a big day. He's flying to Kansas City. They got like a news conference and things. And he gave us some time. Zay, can we say Shohei Ohtani? I mean, I know there's a lot of good baseball information there, but at an individual level, we're September 15th, so there's 2 weeks roughly left, 2.5 into the regular season. Shohei Ohtani sitting at 44 home runs, 94 RBI, 23 steals he's stolen, 23 bags, one of the better base runners in all of baseball. Oh, and on the mound, he's been really good as a starting pitcher. I mean, he's going to have high strikeout to walk numbers and a good record. I mean, I don't know that we'll – maybe, is it getting enough play? Like, I know if this were, you know, LeBron James, or if this were a quarterback, Pat Mahomes or something, doing something. I know he's Japanese, and I know people appreciate it. And he's on a team that's not in competition, so he's not playing big, meaningful games. But individually, to hear somebody like Gene Watson say, "I've never been anything around like it, anything like it." We all haven't. Other players in awe of him. This is special.
Yeah, you better cherish it. You better cherish it because he ain't gonna be around forever.
Well, that's the exciting part, I think, to hear Gene there. He's only 26. You know, he'll be back next year. But can he keep doing this? Becomes the question. I know Shohei Ohtani, when he was asked in the spring, "Can you hold this up?" and he said, "Well, I don't know. That's all I know. It's what I've always done." I mean, he's been playing two ways when healthy for his whole career. Back in Japan, where he dominated that league, he was called the Japanese Babe Ruth for a long time. So this is not like something completely new. They didn't just try this. He didn't do it when he first got here because they wanted to be careful with him. And then he had the injury, right? He had the Tommy John surgery. But this year, he has just been, I mean, spectacular. And that's hopefully in time to Gene's point that the Angels will get healthy and they'll get Anthony Rendon and Mike Trout and all their guys back, and they'll put some more pitching around him. And we can see Shohei Ohtani in a regular season situation. Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be just what baseball needs right now? Because it's going to be good. We got, you know, Dodgers will be in there. Giants are a big market. Astros are everybody loves to hate in the postseason coming up in October. White Sox in the big market of Chicago will be in there. But would be great to see L.A. In there along with the Dodgers with my guy Shohei Ohtani. So, or our guy Shohei Ohtani. I was going to look at his final pitching stats here. Shohei is going to end up 115 innings. He's 9-2 as a starting pitcher with an ERA of 3.36. On top of 44 jacks, 94 driven in, 27 steals. And he's going to be, think about that, Zay. He's going to be a 100 RBI, 50 home run, 10 win pitcher. And maybe a 30-steal guy. I don't know if he got six more bags in him in between now and the end of the year. That's probably a lot. But close to 30 steals, 100 RBIs, 50 home runs, and 10 wins.
better win MVP. That's all I got to say.
And he's got a good chance at 100 strikeouts, too, on top of the 10 wins. So a lot of big round numbers for Shohei, who better be. Because people are now talking about Vladimir Guerrero, who's to 45 home runs. With the Tampa, and Toronto has a chance to make the playoffs, so that's why Vlad Jr. is getting in there. But, gosh, he's not pitching. he doesn't pitch every fifth day. All right, we'll be back. We'll pick up the Texas football conversation with you. We'll also reset those top stories. Cowboys going to have to deal with some adversity on their offensive line for the next five games. Jerry Jones made it official. We'll talk about it next.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
Thank you to Gene Watson. Congratulations to Gene. You'll hear later in the day that he's headed back to Kansas City. He's got a new position that they'll announce, and excited for Gene for sure. He's going to be in the upper office of the Royals again. And good analysis on Major League Baseball. One of several great interviews today, including Brian Davis was with us, Ari Temkin, and look who's here. He's just wandering the halls of ARN, the compound.
Y'all got nobody here.
I know.
Y'all are ghost town in here. Hey, but real quick,
Casey Sutter.
Sorry about that. I didn't mean to cut you off. You're talking about.
Shohei Ohtani.
Ohtani. I think that where he gets his respect will playoffs. That's when all of America will be able to see
him.
He's
got to get there.
They have to get there. And that's the thing. I think if he gets to the playoffs, I think that's where everyone's going to be like, wow, this kid is really that good.
You're right. I mean, that's where
non-baseball fans.
You know, Pat Mahomes goes from star to superstar in the Super Bowl, and Tom Brady, and of course, LeBron James in the NBA. You're right. And unfortunately, it's kind of been the way of Mike Trout, too, with the Angels, that if you can't play in those meaningful October games, it's cool, but it's not superstardom. Casey Studdard, host of the Big Ugly Tailgate every Saturday morning from 8 to 10 with Johnny and Ashley and the crew. And how are you? I know you had to be spitting nails on Saturday watching that that offensive and defensive line performance.
Yeah, it was rough. It was rough. You know, it was just, you know, your whole perception when you got to the University of Texas was the O-line soft, and then a group of guys try to weed all that out for years, you know, and then it's like it's back.
Yeah, can you?
It's back. We're soft as hell, and it sucks.
Yeah, I mean,
I got offensive linemen calling me that play for me in the league. Like, yo, your boys are soft in the middle of the game. He goes, your offensive line. I mean, are you like that's not good.
Well, and I know something that we had Brian Davis mention earlier, which is frustrating. That there are a couple times that the left tackle got just beat, and his quarterback got hit hard, and he didn't go pick him up. Even go pick up his quarterback.
There's none of that. That's the thing. That's what I don't understand. Like that one time the quarterback got hit late and right there in front of the old lineman. No, you grab that dude and you throw his ass off. Like don't just, oh, excuse me, sir. Like, no, that's a cheap late shot. Like that dude deserves one. He gets one.
Yeah.
Right then. And then you're not going to get a flag because of that. You know what I mean? That's just, hey, get off my quarterback.
Yeah, well, the ref saw it too, and he didn't throw a flag for that. He's not. Well, sometimes they'll throw the retaliation flag, but who cares? Take 15.
Yeah.
You can't allow. I mean, and that's the really when you say the soft label, and I know Sark hates that, and he's got to go about fixing that before Big 12 play. But the question is, can you fix that? I mean, because it wasn't just the old line; the whole team looked like they were intimidated. Now I thought the defense held up for a while. For a while, they made some plays. They're running to the football. They forced a couple of field goals. It wasn't perfect and it wasn't great, but it wasn't as bad as what was happening on the offense. But it did feel like it just unraveled. There wasn't a lot of leadership to rally around, and
there's no confidence.
Confidence is a great word. They allowed a Brady really average team to impose its will on Texas.
I mean, yeah, just lay it on them, and that's the hardest thing. Is it's not a. It wasn't like an Alabama or an Auburn or something like that that was coming in here that, you know, you expected something like that. We should have won this football game. And I said on Saturday on the show, I said, I think Texas should win by, you know, 10-13, you know, 10-14. But my biggest thing was, is the offense line going to come and play? It's you know, are they going to hit somebody in the mouth? And that's the one thing I said, and they just never did. It's hard to...
I will say, a history lesson, that before your group, Vince Young and yourself and Lyle Sendlein and Justin Blaylock got to Texas, there was a time, even under Mac Brown, that Texas was labeled soft, right? Country club. Mm-hmm. And every year against Oklahoma, the offensive line would get pushed around and came off soft. You guys changed that. I mean, literally... Yeah. You know, was it the players? I mean, we give a lot. I know on the radio, we gave a lot of credit to Dick Tomey when he came in and brought in started leading those morning workouts with you guys. He was coaching the defense, but it really seemed to change the whole team. Because look, and this goes to the defensive side. If the defensive line is playing against this line every day in practice, it's hurting the D-line big picture.
Yes.
I mean, because they're not getting – I mean, they're either just whooping those dudes or the offense isn't moving.
Or they're not – or they're just playing half-ass in practice because they don't want to embarrass their buddy. And if I'm the D-line coach, you're going – when it's full speed, take that dude and throw his ass on his back. Because that's the only way – as an offense lineman, you can push on your back enough. I mean, they're going to have to put someone in there that's going to fight. Put someone – even if he, you know – he may not have the best technique, but if he's going to fight, I'll take that guy over a guy that's just going to sit there and, you know, not hit somebody in the mouth when time comes.
And it's almost, I mean, I feel like, you know, in hindsight, and I think it's been bared out by Arkansas, that they took the Rice game as kind of a scrimmage, right? They were just, mm-hmm. they weren't going to show anything. They were going to, Sark even mentioned on Monday that they played a lot of four-man defensive fronts, which, you know, Sark knew that wasn't coming. That's not what Barry Odom did, has ever done. But Arkansas has certainly zeroed in on that game, and they've been thinking about that game since camp begun and all offseason.
Oh, yeah.
And they've had a good idea that if they take the Gary Patterson mold and hit Texas in the mouth over and over again, they're going back down.
Yeah.
And the question becomes, can you fix that in season? Can you fix that now? Or, you know, can Kyle Flood, I want to say, work some miracles? Can he come up with some ways to scheme around it? Or these guys get tired of getting hit? Yeah, putting some young Jessies in there.
You're gonna have to. I think you're gonna have to switch it up a little bit. You're gonna have to figure out the right combination. But if you put a couple young guys, you put a young guy next to a the center's young. So that's the one thing, right? So the center's in the middle. So you got him in the middle. You got a vet.
You got a 6-year starter at left guard, a 6-year starter at right tackle, a 3rd-year starter at right guard, and then Christian Jones, the left tackle, is in year 2 as a starter, but really year 3 where he's played a lot.
I think you put a young guy next to Hurstetter, put the young guy in next to Hurstetter so Hurstetter can be like, hey, we got this guy to this guy, so he's not confused on the plays. That's the way I have to do it, because the young guy's going to come and he's going to be thinking about his plays too much, who he's going to. So if you put him next to a vet like Hurstetter walks up to the line, all right, man, we got a dude add to this guy. We got a double to him. We're responsible for these two down linemen and that Mike or whatever, us three and the linebacker, you know, that type of stuff. And I'd probably move, I don't know, that left side's hard.
That left side's hard. I agree with you.
God dang.
You're going to be very right-handed as a football
team. You know, I might move Junior to left and tell him, because he needs to improve too. He needs to get his butt moving too, but at least he understands football. Because the left side to me looked like they're running into each other the whole time.
Yeah, I think that's right.
You know what I mean? Kind of just like, what? And I had someone ask me, he's like, what's going on? Like, and he doesn't watch a lot of football. He's a Jamaican fella. And he goes, it just looks like they're running into each other a lot. I was like, that's because they probably don't know their plays or they're getting confused on one guy up, one guy back. You know, like I texted you last week, it was the one thing that was hard for me, like the biggest thing in offensive line play is if you're sitting in the offensive line and you got a linebacker, you got a 3-down look, you got a guy on the center, you got a guy on both tackles, and you get a linebacker that walks up on you, regardless if that's your ID linebacker or the running back's ID linebacker, he's on the line, that's first dangerous, you take him regardless. Boom, that's it, you got him. And then the running back takes second dangerous on pass plays. So, and then if it's a run play, the center comes with you, the backside guard comes with you, you pick up those three up to the front side linebacker. So, you know, it's just you got to know your stuff. You can't hesitate. It's just
that's where Steve Sarkisian on Monday said, you know, we just didn't do what we've been training. And if you're confused and if you're uncertain, then you're going to look soft because you're thinking, not playing, and your head's over here and you're, oh, no, and then the guy runs right by you. And that's when people ask, how does a 3-man line beat a 5-man line? That's how.
Yeah. And then also with that, it's, you know, you got both guards. What I saw biggest was they're leaving Jake Majors singled up and both guards just went and tried to help the tackles. One guard's got to hold on to keep his eye on the tackle, whichever one's a slide side, keeps his eye on the tackle, you know, keeps eye on linebacker. Linebacker drops, you keep your eye on the tackle, and you don't leave the center until danger comes. So if the guy's running outside, at outside rush, you don't leave the center. And that they were doing that the whole time, just leaving the center one-on-one the whole time, and this guy now has any way he can go because the quarterback's rush lanes are huge now because the guards are way pushing out tackles and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, cavernous holes. I mean, how many runs do they have of double-digit yards before anybody got touched downfield for Arkansas? Casey Studdard is here. We have more of that passion on Saturday on the Big Ugly Tailgate. I didn't know this. I had a cold beverage with your Uncle Robert the other day. Robert Studdard, and of course your father and he, and one other brother, right, in the Studdard clan?
Well, there's five brothers, but the ones that played were my Uncle Robert, my Uncle Les, and my dad, Dave.
Yeah, from the valley, from down in the, some hard-nosed ranch.
Pearsall, South San Antonio. Not that far down.
Almost down there. Yeah. But I didn't know that he went to school at Texas and was good friends with the Texans owner, Cal McNair.
Oh, yeah. Cal knows, yeah. I got some funny stories about Cal told me when I was...
Because you played for the Texans.
Yeah.
Yeah, Cal, what would Robert call him? Floppy? Yeah. Floppy, that long floppy hair.
So it's weird. Yeah, it's a crazy relationship there.
That's funny. Yeah. I said, well, then can you call him and tell him to quit screwing around with my Texans? Come on, man.
It's
a mess. All right, buddy. Good to see you.
Good seeing y'all.
Get over to Whitfield's, pick up some great barbecue, and make that happen. That's Brody and Davis in South Austin with Casey Studdard. He'll be on 8 to 10 Saturday morning with the Big Ugly Tailgate. We're coming right back.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
Appreciate Casey Studdard. We had a lot of great interviews today. I thought Ari Temkin was great early, talking Cowboys from the Cowboys Radio Network. Brian Davis from the Statesman with some great analysis on the quarterback situation at Texas with Casey Thompson taking over. Gene Watson, awesome. Today talking baseball, final few weeks of the regular season, into the postseason. We'll have Gene on again once we get to that October season. And Casey Studdard, that will be the Grande Equipment, big interview of the day. The Grande interview with Big Casey, a lot of folks weighing in, loving it. Says, guys, I've been waiting for that. Thanks for having Casey on. Played high school in the O-line with one of Bucky's sons. And big fan of Studdard and his style of play. Glad y'all had him on. And on his way out the door, Casey said this in all humility. He said if he had the length of some of those linemen at Texas, some of the guys on the left side, he'd be in the Hall of Fame. And I don't disagree with that. If you saw Casey Studdard play, that is not hyperbole. If he was 6'6", 6'7", with those arms, but played with the way he played, that's when you end up with Orlando Pace. I mean, that's because Orlando Pace played with the technique and the tenacity and the athleticism that you saw Casey play with. But Casey's 6'2", 6'3", and, you know, doesn't have the length that you see these guys have. Dan Neal, who was on with us earlier in the week, he also would be in the Hall of Fame if he were 6'6", 6'7". But, you know, you can't have what you want. But the point is, those guys got to play better. And that is your Grande interview. Speaking of Grande Equipment, my buddy Wes Murray and his team, I did talk to Wes yesterday. I texted him because he was down in Port Aransas riding the storm out, as they say, making sure that Tropical Storm Nicholas didn't do much damage. And fortunately, if you do have a place in Port A like Wes does and his team, Grande Equipment, just a little bit of rain, about an inch of rain and some wind, but things went to the right, of course, and to the east of Port A. So appreciate hearing from Wes, and I'm glad to hear everything's good. If you need any equipment, piece of equipment, go see my buddies at Grande Equipment. They're right there in Kyle, Texas, the old Thunderhill Raceway. Find them online at grandeequipment.com, and you can't go wrong. And coming up on Friday, we're going to pick our Grande Equipment, Grande Performers of the Game for Saturday. Will it be Casey Thompson? Will it be the O-line? Does the O-line step up and, hey, look, it's Rice. We can beat up on the Rice Owls. I don't know. That would be kind of discouraging. But either way, that's what you want to see. You want to see improvement for Texas on both lines. And, Zay, how, you know that your dad's been a basketball coach 30-plus years. How long has it been? 40 years now for your dad?
Yeah, he's going on 40.
40 years. Coach back at Coach CC, Coach Collier at Bowie. Before that, he was at Southwest Texas State as the head coach. You know, sometimes when you have a team and you're bad at a position, you know, like, or you're rough at a position, it can hurt other aspects of your team. Like if you're not getting pushed, if your center's not getting pushed by the backup center, or vice versa, you get into a game against a real good center, you know, you're gonna get pushed around. And if you're the center, you think you're dominating this dude. Well, he's just not very good, right? I'm worried about that for Texas big picture. That. And that's why I keep saying I think maybe Sark over-evaluated his D-line because of his O-line and scouted his O-line. I don't know. I don't know how to explain Sark talking about how the defensive line is the strength of the team. It's our best unit. They're deep. We're great. And the first two games, they've been just okay. Or at least the first game, they were okay. The second game, they got pushed all over the field, and then the O-line just was exposed. Hopefully that was one bad game, and it can be better against TCU and Oklahoma and the better teams they're going to play down the road. But, boy, they got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, and obviously this weekend against Rice won't tell everything, but Texas in a couple of weeks, and those guys are ready to you know, get their revenge on what happened in Lubbock last year. So I think just like what you and Casey are saying, what everybody's saying, until this offensive line gets better, then this Texas offense is still going to have problems.
Well, and you wonder when they – maybe this is the week they try out some of these young guys in real game activity. You know, see if an Andre Carrick, who showed well last year late, you know, if you need to move – the one thing you do know with Derek Kerstatter is he can play anywhere, right? You could move him to guard and maybe shuffle some things and get Andre Carrick in at tackle, because Andre doesn't play guard. He's a tackle. You know, could you slide Kerstatter over and try, and then Casey Stead, maybe use Angle out left guard, use Majors at center, Kerstatter at right guard, and Carrick playing right tackle. You know, we've heard the name Hayden Hurst, a young guy, freshman out of Katy, who could emerge. But as Dan Neal said to us yesterday, man, you start going to freshman offensive linemen, they can have the right technique, but strength-wise, I mean, you need a couple of years in a program, unless you're Orlando Pace, and you just walk in and start bull-rushing people, you know, dancing ballerina, big bear ballerina like Orlando was. They're hard to find, but, you know, they got to do something, because a lot of good teams. Gary Patterson will get after them. Oklahoma's got their best defensive front they've had in a while, they believe. And, you know, Baylor's got a really good defense. I mean, you got to figure it out at this point. All right, Zay, great stuff today. Appreciate it. We'll do it again tomorrow. Bucky will be back for a Buck Off Thursday, and then Friday we'll start really drilling down on these games of the week in the college ranks and the pros, and we'll have a lot of fun. Get your Buck Offs ready. Don't let it fester and harbor. You got to get it off your chest. We'll do that tomorrow starting at 6 a.m. all the way to 10. If you missed any of our conversations today, go back and tune them back in on the podcast with Casey and Gene Watson and Brian Davis, Ari Temkin, and thank you to Isaiah Collier. Great job as usual. Co-hosting and manning the ship through the glass. Have a wonderful Wednesday, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. Next up, it's Light the Tower. Then it's our Shirts and Skins program, RBKD, this afternoon. Remember, it's Wednesday. That means high school football tonight. IHS fan under the lights at 7. Have a great Wednesday.